Buddy, welcome to a Thursday edition of the Bulldog Hour. Kevin Gonzo alongside, as always, here as always until 3 o'clock, and then CG and Gonzo bring you to 6. And I've said this all week long, so used to forward promoting, and I can only forward promote beyond Gonzo and CG to the national network at 6 o'clock, which I think is still Sarah Spain. I'm not. You never know at this particular time what ESPN Radio might have in mind for us, except everybody on ESPN Radio nationally has found itself on television now. And I'm going to tell you something, and I mentioned it to friends earlier in the week. This week, and I'll talk to Marcus tomorrow at length about the NFL, this week, because of free agency in the National Football League, it has been a viable sports week. We'll see nationally what happens next week when all of this settles down, though we talk about the National Football League being not for long. It is jarring to see Todd Gurley and Matthews and guys like that, though it's not a surprise, particularly with Gurley, because we've known something was wrong really during the Rams Super Bowl run, not this season, but the season prior. We knew that that arthritic knee that plagued him back at Georgia was a problem, and to see a guy who was so ballyhooed when the Rams came back being let go for cap reasons, it tells you that it is not for long in the league, but it also tells you that once we get through this period of time and things settle down, unless baseball shows up in a big hurry, and a big hurry would be middle of May, it is going to be a very fascinating 4 weeks or so once the NFL wraps this stuff up. But I'll talk to Marcus about that tomorrow. CG and I will also have emails tomorrow in the 2-4 stretch. For today, it is a basketball-centric Thursday with our good friend Daryl Howerton, HoopMag.com, NBA.com, noted Spurs honk, and a guy who is always willing to put up with me until 3 o'clock. So let's bring him up right now. After 3, he cannot stand anything about me, but he pretends to like me until 3 o'clock. Let's bring him up right now. Daryl, how you doing?
Yes, my Tony tolerance is up to 60 minutes now.
Well, I was going to say, that puts you in the top of the list, I think, for that. That's the reality that I face every day. All right, I'm going to tell you, Paisan, where we're going to start here. Before we get to everything with Fresno State, I talked to Jackson yesterday. We certainly earlier in the week, by the way, did address what has happened with Nate Grimes. And I want to repeat this before we go any farther because I've had more emails about it. Only Nate and the other individual involved with this know for sure what happened. So there is no way to take sides either way. I'm not here to vilify Nate nor to exonerate him. That is up to the legal system, period, and we're going to leave it that way. Nate has a point of view about what happened. The other side of the issue also has a point of view, and that's going to have to be vetted through the legal avenues that we have in this country, and because of that, we're going to leave it right there. As far as we talked yesterday about the transfer situation, Jackson had brought up that the likelihood was there that Mustafa Lawrence would be in the transfer portal. He is now, so we're going to talk about he and a gal and all of that with Daryl momentarily. We'll also, in this full hour about basketball today, get to the NBA and some of the things going on that Daryl covers at NBA.com. But Daryl, I had an email because I've kidded around about this with CG in particular. We have an archival amount of emails that I've lost track of. There are probably 500 pages of emails we haven't gotten to. It doesn't mean we've ignored them. It means that as we go through, other things become more relevant, but also there's a redundancy to them. But one was from Manny back in 2017 that I kidded around we're going to get to about the most unbreakable records in all of sport. And that's what ESPN is doing now, too. Along those lines, Martin had sent in an email saying, you know, ESPN the other day, Daryl, talked about the top 10 upsets in the big dance. The problem was almost every one of the upsets, understandably, was an early round proposition, Virginia getting knocked off, etc. Martin said, hey, here's what I want. Since we talked about the Mount Rushmore of Fresno State all the time, our top four athletes, we've talked about it for a couple of years. He said, how about the Mount Rushmore, the top four upsets in the final four in the big dance? So I want you to ponder that. I don't want you to give me any of the particulars that you have, but later on I'm going to tell you my four, and I'm going to see how close you and I happen to match up. How about that? Fair enough?
Sounds like a plan. Okay. Sounds okay.
Good. Well, because even if you said you don't like it, I was still going to do it anyway, so thanks for playing along. All right, so anyway, that having been said, we'll get to that later. Let's start, Darryl, with Fresno State. First of all, with Agau, you're a guy who has been very high on Agau's potential. He still has a lot of eligibility left. So before we get to Lawrence or Rojas or the guys that are evidently leaving, about Agau, how big a loss is this going to be? You know,
I think it's a huge loss, but it's not necessarily going to be showed up as far as people notice out there, because he really didn't play a lot this past year. But I thought he should have. I thought he was one of the three best players entering the season. And I really didn't understand why he didn't play this year. I'm a big Agau fan, and he showed signs his freshman year that he was that he could really contribute offensively. His shooting improved tremendously. He looked like he had no shot at the beginning of the year, and then he was nailing three pointers the last 2 months of the season. And his defense and everything else, you know, he's just such a great team player that I thought it's a huge loss that we're missing him. And as far as Mustafa Lawrence is concerned, he didn't play so much toward the latter end of the season, which might be part of the reason why he transferred.
Right.
But he really, really was the glue that kept this team together in the first half. Fresno State needed a playmaker. We really didn't have one all season long with Noah, I should say in the beginning with Noah Blackwell out. And Mustafa, the playmaking he brought in Noah's absence was huge. I'd hate to see what this team would have looked like without him. And so, you know, going into next season, we really don't have a proven playmaker on the roster, with the exception of the 6'7 freshman, Leo Colomerio. You know, we'll see what he can do as a freshman. But the rest of the team is comprised of, you know, wings and bigs. So I'm sure they'll go out and recruit somebody good. But as of now, you know, it looks like a big loss.
Look, let's start with Lawrence, and we'll get back to Agau, and then one of your favorites, Rojas, and you and I have never particularly had the same point of view about Rojas, but I realize that you felt there was a niche for him that was evidently never filled. But with Lawrence, and maybe it's the body type, because he did, as I mentioned you from the outset, and he was a transfer, he reminded me physically of a Vinnie Johnson type of guy, and because of that, I thought of him more as an energy guy, a guy off the bench who comes in, tries to change the tempo, tries to give you instant offense. If he doesn't, then he goes back to the bench. But I know you have felt that he could run the point. Was he miscast at all in his role here, or was it just dependent strictly upon who else might have been healthy / eligible at the time?
No, I wouldn't say miscast at all. And any criticism I make is not directed at the coaches.
I'm not talking about that, Darryl. I'm talking about the approach whenever he was on the floor itself. It might not have been what the coaches said they wanted him to do. I guess what I'm saying is, did he do what you felt he should have done while he was on the floor? Because he did look for his offense quite a bit.
Yes, but he also looked to create for the others. He was the one rare player, besides Noah Blackwell, that created a lot of assists for other players. I mean, he was tremendous at that. Jared Heider, you know, was a scorer. Jordan Campbell was obviously a shoot-first player. A lot of the other guards that they have, you know, aren't necessarily playmakers. And that's not a criticism of them. It's just that Mustafa and Noah were the two guys who looked out for others and created plays, even if they did look for their own shot at times. And that element will be, you know, was desperately needed when Noah Blackwell was missing in the beginning of the season. So I don't think anything that he was asked to do, you know, he helped out immediately as a junior college transfer who was new to the system. He got thrown into the water right away and had to play big minutes. And I thought he did a good job. You know, did he, you know, was he missing and lacking in some things? Sure. But those things would have come in time. And I thought there were more positives than negatives. And, you know, and you know, I'm sure the lack of playing time toward the end of the season, as the other freshmen were back and healthy and playing, and Noah was getting his deserved minutes, and New Williams as well. You know, I'm sure that, you know, probably got to him at the end, because he had a much bigger role the first half of the season.
About Rojas, you have felt Look, here's the difference of opinion you and I have had. I know that you felt that he could be an impactful player down low. My concern about Rojas was always his footwork. I thought as a big man, he did not quite have the quickness to stay with some of the 6'8", 6'9", guys that really drive this league forward. In the case of San Diego State, some of the guys around 6'6", like Mitchell, they just were too physical and too athletic for a guy like Rojas. Your feeling about Rojas and his career here?
He's our best rim protector. He's what we need. The most important position in basketball is having a rim protector. And in games against Utah State, Colorado State, he was very, very valuable. I mean, how he played Nemi Esqueta straight up in the 2019 games was very instrumental in us beating them once and losing by 1 point once. You know, so I understand your points, but he's a center. He's going to have trouble with the 6'8 forwards out there that get matched up. But when you put another center out there on the floor, there's nobody better to put out there as him. And on a similar note, Christian Gray, who redshirted this year, who obviously didn't play this year either, you know, he was a great defender. You could throw him against the muscular guys like Nevada's Jordan Caroline, and he could bang and neutralize him. So we had, on the 2019 team, we had two valuable centers who backed up Nate Grimes when he started at center. And, you know, basically Christian and Laz were our eighth and ninth men who played a lot of minutes on that team. And I expect their role to be, you know, increased next year with Nate Grimes being gone. And, you know, basically Fresno State lacking centers, you know, with experience. And those two guys have winning experience on a 23-win team.
You bring up Kata. I wanted to ask you about this because, and it's a shame that Utah State, like San Diego State, will not get their chance in the tournament. But, and we're going to talk about the NBA at length. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of time on Thursdays to talk about the NBA because there's not going to be any big dance. This, by the way, should have been, as you know, Daryl, the first great day of the tournament. Today should have been the first four, the last couple of days from Dayton, where I feel bad for the Flyer fans because, you know, they had a legitimate chance to cut down the nets, and that goes away. But today would have been the first of the grouping of 64. To me, the Thursday and Friday of the first week, the best time of the tournament. That's why I'd like to see them expand it to 96 so we could have the whole thing on Tuesday and Wednesday as well. But because we don't have that to talk about, we're certainly going to turn our attention to the NBA in weeks to come and hope that that league gets back to things somewhere in June. But I want to ask you about Kata because he has now got the aggression down. We always saw from the very outset that there was an understanding of this game. There's no way in the world that he's going to escape the lottery, is he, in the next year or so? I mean, he pulled his name out last year. There got to be a lot of people looking forward to Kata being on their team. Am I right about that?
Right. When it comes to rim protecting, you know, he's obviously the best in the conference, voted defensive player of the year last year and had the same dominant effect out there this year. Now, I don't know if I wouldn't guarantee that he's going to be a lottery pick, but I would be willing to bet that he'll be a first round pick. He, you know, he checks off all the marks that you want in a defensive big man. He's, you know, adequate on the offensive end. And when I say adequate, I mean at the NBA level. At college, he's stellar. You know, he really contributes to the Utah State program and did what he needed to do. But the big things he really contributes to a team is defensively. And that's what he's going to do at the NBA level. You know, maybe playing 20, 25 minutes I could see in the NBA for, you know, certain teams.
Well, you and I will be talking about that because one of the things I'm going to ask you about is when in the world we're going to have the draft, period, if they go back and start the year. Again, I would assume they're not going to have the end of the regular season no matter what, but if they start the playoffs in June, there are two things that are very much at issue. One is the draft. The other thing is if we have an Olympic Games in Tokyo, who in the world outside of Steph Curry is going to be eligible to play? I had an emailer saying, hey, it's nice to see that Steve Kerr said that they're continuing with their plans, and that the emailer said, so is Steve planning on starting at shooting guard and Greg is going to run the point, meaning Popovich, because that may be all that's going to be left because the rest of the guys are still going to be in the middle of the playoffs, except for the Warriors who have a lot of time to ponder things. But don't bring up anything about that until we get back to that. That's my decision, all right? So, okay, the other guy I want to ask you about then is Agao in this whole thing. When I always look back at things during Tark's tenure, at UNLV and before that at Long Beach State, one of the things that jumps out was a guy named George Gervin. You might have heard of him, right?
Speaking of being
a Spurs honk, he scored a few points for your San Antonio Spurs in both the ABA days when he was running alongside a great guard by the name of James Silas, who we never saw the best of in the NBA because he was at the end of his career. But we all know the Iceman was he was one of the great revelations that basketball has ever seen. Tark, you know this. I don't know other people are aware of it. Tark had George Gervin at Long Beach State, had him there ready to go, and Tark says girlfriend back in Michigan wanted Gervin back home, and so George went back for the short stay in the MAC, and then he was on his way to the ABA. With a gal, how much is it that he wants to go back home? How much is that the bottom line of this thing, Daryl?
I don't know. I actually saw him a week ago. We chatted. We really weren't talking about the Fresno State basketball team at all, just mostly about the coronavirus and everything he could and couldn't do here as far as they couldn't practice with the team, they couldn't lift weights and all that type of stuff, and he was going to be headed to Nebraska. So I know, you know, there's a fondness for, you know, back home, but I'm not sure. I didn't talk to him because I didn't know he was transferring. I didn't talk to him about the team, so you know, I don't know the, you know, particulars. I just know he's a wonderful man, and you know, he's spent time in LA with the AAU teams out there, and you know, and he's well connected in the basketball world, good friends with Luol Deng, you know, and all kinds of, you know, there's just all kinds of good connections that he's, I'm sure whatever he wants to do in life, he will succeed. He's a good man. He's a good person. He's smart, and he's, you know, very athletic, and I just enjoyed his time here.
Assuming that it's going to be three Scullies available, and that could vary one way or the other here as things scope out, what's the best direction for Fresno State to head with the needs they have right now? I mean, obviously, one great thing would be if Jalen Green decided to come back home. And I will ask you, let's try it this way. If he would have stayed at Memorial, I would think there was a great chance that he was going to stay here, because I know that Hutt is a player's coach. But the fact that he took off to Napa, does that mitigate the chance coming back? I know he's been very deferential, but you know what? I brought it up yesterday, football-wise. Kendall Milton was very deferential, but we knew that he was headed to a major conference and ultimately, of course, to the football-crazy SEC at Georgia. Do you believe Jalen Green is just being deferential and polite to his hometown, or is it truly an interest he has to come and play here? Or is he going to go right to the NBA and forget all of this stuff? What's going to happen here?
Yeah, well, you know, fortunately for everybody who's looking to recruit him, the NBA freshman to, you know, or high school senior is a year away. So, you know, thankfully that's not a competitor, but, you know, we
unless he goes somewhere, wait a second, unless he goes overseas for a year, Daryl, you know that, unless he does that,
which
right?
Which is a possibility. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we've seen the LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton, you know, go to Australia this year and Andrew Bogut's league and, you know, and show that's a good variable way to get back into the lottery. And, you know, and a lot of other players are going to test that similar route, depending, but this whole coronavirus really thing has everything up in the air. We don't even know when the draft is and all this other type of stuff. So not only are you dealing with that type of unknown, but then you're also dealing with unknowns in college basketball as well. The NCAA has its own money problems going through right now. And so as far as Jalen's concerned, I know Justin Hutson pulled off a similar coup when he got Kawhi Leonard to go to San Diego State. I know
never
Pete
heard
Brown
of him.
Had a great. Pete Brown had a.
I heard of him until last year. Then he's completely off my radar after last year. Sorry, go ahead. My apologies.
Oh, you heard of him
go
in 2017. You told Zaza about him. I know that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know what? Here we go again. Okay. Zaza was, as he was called, was it Draymond that doesn't call him Zaza? He calls him Zaza like he's one of the Gabors. Is it Draymond that calls him that? That was completely inadvertent, and I'm going to say it one more time. And if you break out laughing, I'm going to have Gonzo hang up on you or hang up on me. He's going to hang up on one of the two of us. Here's the deal. If Pachulia had a history of that kind of behavior, Don't you dare. Then I would have understood. But the guy has had a pristine record as a player. One indiscretion. One or 100. One of the two. It was an issue. All right, fine. You're right. Okay. Your point is well taken. But the thing about Kawhi Leonard, let's remember this. We talked to Steve Fisher about it, as you know, on air when Steve called up to recommend Hutt for the job a couple summers ago, that Kawhi Leonard, even though he turned out to be a great, great player at San Diego State, an even better player, obviously, in the NBA, he was not that known commodity. I mean, it was Hudson who went to Fisher, as you're well aware, and said, Steve, there's a guy in L.A. that you've got to see. And Fisher said, okay, let's get in the car and let's go. And he said, we're signing him. He was not the guy that everybody across the country was after. That is different. Jalen Green is the guy that everybody's after. So it's a little bit of a different situation, right?
Right. I mean, because all the big schools were recruiting Jalen from the get-go. And the big schools did get to Kawhi, but they got to him late. So
right.
So San Diego State did have that advantage. But that being said, Justin could just point out to Jalen his track record. Look at what we did when we did have Kawhi, when all the other big schools wanted him. And look how well we helped develop him and what he's gone on to do. And, you know, same thing with Pascal Siakam in New Mexico when, yep. You know, with Keith Brown out there. Those two, you know, champions off the Raptors 2019 team, you know, speak very well for this team. Plus, on the positive side, you look at this team played a lot of freshmen this year. You know, 50% of their minutes were taken up by freshmen. So freshmen that are recruited know that they can play out over here. You know, they got the three recruits, Leo Colomario, Destin Whitaker, and Braxton Mia. You know, so... Right. You know, they do have a good track record. Of course, San Joaquin Memorial's Braxton Mia, teammate of Jalen Green. So there are a lot of positives. But like you say, it's a long shot. I would be surprised, but I would be pleasantly surprised. And, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that Justin Hudson has, you know, shocked the recruiting world and landed a big one. Orlando Robinson was, you know, was one of those last year. They went out and got him, and that was, you know, a big one on their market. Not to mention Niven Hart when they got him in the later recruiting process.
Yeah, and Hart has been, if there's been a guy who has opened the most eyes here during the last disappointing year, and there's nobody's going to pretend otherwise, you come off 23 wins. There are reasons for what happened this last year. But one of the true bright spots was toward the end of the year. We already knew the athleticism, but seeing what Hart can be as a player, I mean, I think he's someone who can be a revelation if he can get – first of all, the defensive end down, but also the playing time sorted out. All right, then let me ask you this. Let's assume that Green is not coming here. I said this about Milton. I'll say it about Green. A bounce back is always a possibility. I just didn't think there's any way that they would see Milton, football-wise, right out of the chute come here. I think the same thing with Green, but it doesn't mean he won't come home, ultimately, if he's even still around. So I want to ask you then, Darryl, with a guy like Orlando Robinson, and you know my feeling that a lot of the offense should go through Robinson at a high post because he is a willing passer and a guy who can create his own offense, how long can you see Robinson being in college?
I anticipate he'll be here another year, which is a positive sign, you know, because he could go pro now. But all signs look that he'll be here for another year. And I think a lot depends on how well this Fresno State team does. I mean, he's, you know, he was able to excel in a, you know, despite an 11-win season, and he's got a lot to offer this squad. I mean, he's a growing young man. You know, where he'll play next year, will it be a one in and four out? Will he be played more post? Will he be a center? You know, I don't know. Will he be teaming up with Laz Rojas, Christian Gray, and Hassan Ju as they split the center minutes? You know, who knows exactly how that all gets worked out? And we can't forget about Chris Seeley either, you know, who had some good experience at Utah.
But Seeley's a guy who's going to be gone almost assuredly here. So I mean,
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, but I guess what I'm getting at is this, Darryl. When you look at next year's team, not knowing precisely who's coming back, we have a good idea that they're probably four on their way out. How do you feel about doing what the football team did from 16 to 17? And I don't mean that the basketball team was at that kind of depth of despair the way the football team was before Tedford came in, because it was a 23-win basketball team a year ago. But what can we expect, in your opinion, out of the team we're going to see on the floor beginning in November?
I think we're going to see four guards playing with one big man. I think we're going to see a lot of running, a lot of transition. And I think we're also going to see, the remaining scholarships go to guards. Definitely need point guards, definitely need playmakers, because the passing is lacking. We had more turnovers and assists this year. Really don't have a playmaker on the roster that's has any experience. I mean, Leo Colomerio at 6'7 is a point guard, but will he be a 6'7 point guard at Fresno State? I don't know. I think that's the biggest question. You know, all the big men that Fresno State has right now, I don't think they need to recruit anymore. They have, you know, five guys who are either 6'10", 6'11", or way 240, like Christian Gray, 6'6", 240. So they've got the big men handled. And Hudson seems to like to play four smalls with one big. So they're set there. The four smalls is what they need to make sure they're loaded in with players like Niven Hart, Jared Hyder, and Anthony Holland, you know, having a lot of experience this year. And all the other guys need to step up, Jordan Campbell, Destin Whitaker, Leo Colomerio, whatever guards they recruit. You know, there's got to be more depth there.
Well, look, Sealy, Rojas, Agao, and Lawrence, those four almost assuredly will not be on the roster. Can you believe right now that none of those will be a major loss vis-a-vis the guys that are coming in and the guys that Fresno State have? I guess what I'm asking is the core, in your opinion, for success still intact with, as our buddy Joe had said, with the four H's, right, with Hudson, and then with the guys like Hart, guys like Holland, who is, you know, underrated because he is the Swiss Army knife in a lot of ways, with the guys in Hyder, with the four H's, are the Fresno State Bulldogs in good hands, in your opinion, with those guys and Robinson? You know, I was kidding around that maybe it should be H2O, right, because it's going to be somebody like a Hyder to Orlando, the whole thing, right? Is this a team that at its core is ready to compete and not have the kind of year we just saw?
No, we need to see a lot more. We don't know. They're going to have to come back better. Losing three seniors, you know, it's you know, they're on the positive side. Orlando Robinson, you know, will probably make some preseason all-conference teams. Niven Hart might even get some consideration. He might be a top 20 player on next year's squad. But there's nobody else on this roster that will be given top 20 consideration with all the other good players at the other universities. So this team will have to prove itself on the floor. It's not one of those teams that you can go in saying it's going to win 20, 25 games like we've had in the past. That doesn't mean I don't think they can do it. Orlando Robinson is a top talent. Niven Hart's a top talent. And these freshmen got a lot of experience. So, you know, there is a room for a big leap in the win column. But you have to prove it. I just can't predict it.
Fair enough. And, again, the four guys we've mentioned, the assumption is, through the transfer portal, that everybody is going to be moving along, but you never say never about what might happen around the bend. There could be other guys that change their mind, and that opens up spots, but we are right now going under that assumption, so we'll see how things play out. All right, Daryl, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the break. We're going to come back and try to avoid any conversation about the Spurs, all right, because I don't want to depress you about your team, because, you know, my club, what, put how many wins up now? Was it 13 or 14? I lost track. What was it? Do you know? What did the Warriors end up with ultimately? So it's somewhere in the low teens, I believe, which that used to be what happened for the start of October to mid-November. Wasn't it just, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it just a year or so ago that they started out 11-1? Am I hallucinating about that? So,
yeah,
anyway.
73 wins. 73 wins seems so far away.
I'm not talking about 73 wins, although the Bucks might have been deprived of a 70-win season, though I don't think that they were going to push it that much. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to take the break, going to come back and address Martin's question about that Mount Rushmore, and then we are going to get to a few of the things in the NBA, and we're going to avoid your Spurs, and then we'll also avoid the greatness of my Warriors. Again, I've got my Remember 2018 bumper sticker somewhere ready to go. All right, we'll take a break. If Daryl is foolish enough to hang around, he will also be with us as we come off the break. So let's do this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. We're back after this. everybody. Welcome back. Just about 2:40, Bulldog Hour to 3, and then it'll be CG and Gonzo, Christopher Gabriel program at 6 o'clock tonight. Remind you, tomorrow, Marcus will be with me in the first of the 2 hours, and we will talk about the National Football League and the local ties and all of that stuff, and what it might mean for Derek Carr and the Tom Brady situation, if he's got his physical taken care of in Tampa, all of that. And then CG will join me, as always, at 3 o'clock. We'll go over your emails, tdad1@att.net, tdad, the number 1@att.net, and we'll try to get to those that we missed on Wednesday and get to some of those that are in archive. Good luck with that one, but we will give it a shot between 3 and 4 tomorrow. Also, since I had brought this up earlier, I'm talking with Daryl, of course, HoopMag.com, part of NBA.com. Oddly enough, we're talking basketball, though I did want to mention our good friend Rob in Las Vegas is in a position to listen live right now because of what is going on with the coronavirus. And, Rob, I'm glad you're okay, and I'm also glad you have a chance to listen live, although my wife can tell you that listening to me live is not exactly a treat. I got it out of the way, Daryl, before I hear about it at 3 o'clock, okay? But Rob had made a comment about the Houston Astros, and Rob, you're right. That is not something that's at the top of the list of priorities right now, but without question, there are probably people in the Astros front office that are sort of relieved, not the circumstances of COVID-19, but relieved that something, how unfortunate it might have been, we're going to find out in the long term, but that it took the Astros for the moment off the front and center part of the sports websites, what have you. If baseball comes back in mid-May and the Astros start hitting the deck like Bob Gibson is throwing at them all the time, then that's going to come back to the forefront. But right now it has been pushed to the back pages in a figurative sense, so you're right about that. And I notice, Rob, you are now the king of the ghost town in Las Vegas. So the king of Henderson is also the king of the ghost town of Las Vegas, Nevada. That's pretty amazing. I never thought anything short of World War III would close the casinos, but we found out there is something that would do it. And I hope everybody, by the way, is okay and taking whatever precautions they can. All right, Daryl, let's get to Martin's email. And let's see, I'm going to give you my Mount Rushmore 4 of all-time upsets in the NCAA tournament in the Final Four. And then you can tell me how close I came to your mental checklist. Now, understand the premise here. Martin had emailed in and said that ESPN was going through top 10 lists left and right, understandably so, as they really right now have just one sports center. This case, it's been Van Pelt doing this, and then it's repeating all night. They talked about the top 10 upsets in the history of the Big Dance, and most of them, of course, then were in early rounds, and that's understandable that you're going to have that. But when Martin asked about the top four, the Mount Rushmore, if you will, of upsets, here's what I came up with, Daryl, okay? Ready. Number one, this would be in a finals game, would be then Texas Western, now UTEP, over Kentucky. You know, the movie was made about Don Haskins and the all-African-American starting five, Glory Road. Not so much that Kentucky was a superior team, but rather the public perception was such of the history of Adolph Rupp in Kentucky that it was a stunner, though I think all along Texas Western was the better team. So to me, because of the public perception issue, that's one of the top all-time Final Four upsets. The other would be, for the title, would be what happened in 83 at the Pit in Albuquerque. That would be Jim Valvano running around, the late, great Jimmy V, trying to find someone to hug after the last second air ball that turned into the Charles dunk that turned into what I think is the most massive title game upset, which was North Carolina State over Phi Slamma Jamma and Akeem and the guys in Drexler and everybody at Houston. The other two are the two that, to me, are maybe the most stunning upsets, even though the two teams that won were quality. One would be UCLA losing in the semifinal to NC State, right in the backyard of NC State in Greensboro. This is when the Bruins, that's the Bill Walton, then Keith Wilkes, afterward, of course, Jamal Wilkes, the team looking for the eighth straight national championship. the team that had lost their 88-game winning streak earlier in the year to Notre Dame, losing that game in double overtime, a game where UCLA had a 7-point lead in that second OT, but John Wooden, at a time we didn't have a shot clock, John Wooden would not hold the basketball, and UCLA ended up losing that game. So even though they had lost a couple of games to the Oregon schools after they lost to Notre Dame in the regular season, that was still a UCLA team that, should not have been beaten, and they were. That one becomes my third big upset. The fourth one, you probably know what I'm going to say. In my opinion, the best college basketball team to never win a title, the 90-91 defending champion UNLV Runnin' Rebels, speaking of Tark, a team that was so good that they went into Fayetteville when Nolan Richardson had the 40 minutes of hell with Arkansas and just pummeled Arkansas on their home floor. They were 34-0. Playing a national semifinal against a team in Duke that they had beaten 103-73 at McNichols Arena in Denver the previous year to win the title. And that's the game I told you that we always hear coaches, Daryl, talk after the fact about, well, our team wasn't ready to play. Tark said it before the game. He told Kirkerich, we are not ready to play today. Now, how stunning is that? That one of the greatest coaches of all time looking at one of the great teams, and he knew they weren't ready, and Duke upset them 79-77 in the semifinal. To me, the most stunning upset of all of them because of how good UNLV was. Those are my four. How close do I come to your top four Final Four upsets?
Well, it's funny because, I mean, the North Carolina State one, spot on. The first one you said, spot on. And the Duke one, I wanted to say that. I go, but Tony's not going to go there because that Duke team was really good.
It was an outstanding team. You're right. It was the Bobby Hurley guys that learned their lesson from the year before. You're right.
You're
about
right.
That.
It was a huge upset, and I mentally had that on my list because I was thinking, because UNLV was that prohibitive of a favorite. You know, they were, you know, that. So that made sense. The other, you know, so those three I had on my consideration. There were three others that I kind of got in the mix.
Georgetown in there somewhere in Villanova, perhaps? Just curious, just wondering.
Well, actually, I'm a big fan of Brad Stevens and Butler, what he was able to do with that Butler team that really came off the map. At the time, right. It looked like a huge David versus Goliath upset. And anybody who knows the Bible and knows, you know, what David was actually the favorite versus Goliath. I mean, he had a gun. If you have a slingshot and you're able to use it as a gun and kill bears and lions, you're the favorite that everybody thinks you're the underdog.
No, I didn't know that David was going to make it into this, but sure, okay, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah, and so actually, in actuality, David was a favorite. He had a gun against a giant. Everybody right. thought the bigger guy was going to win, but he had a slingshot. On a similar note, Butler in 2010 had Brad Stevens coaching a team that was led by Gordon Hayward, an NBA All-Star, and Shelvin Mack. And Duke didn't have the talent to match up with that NBA talent. Even though Duke had the big name, the big coach, you look at their roster and the NBA talent was bigger on Butler's side than it was on that. So at the time, it looked like a huge upset. Unknown right. Butler, you know, goes out there and does it. And I think the next team, the 2011 team that did it without Gordon Hayward, with just Shelvin Mack there, they weren't even a top 25 team. And to go out there, you know, the first team was able to beat Draymond Green and take him out of the Final Four to get to the Final right. Four. And the last one they beat, in the 2011 squad, beat Virginia Commonwealth to play Connecticut. Now, Connecticut was a little bit tougher with Kemba Walker and Jeremy Lamb. They weren't able to get by them. But those two Butler teams and the 1999 Gonzaga team, which really came out of nowhere to go far in the tournament. And every year since then, we've taken them for granted because they do it all the time. But that first year, they really surprised us. They only had one NBA player, Richie Fromm, who really didn't spend a lot of time in the league. And that 99 Gonzaga team, not only did it, you know, make waves at the time, but those waves just built and built, and they've established themselves now, you know, as a solid top five program year in and year out.
First of all, in my Matt Damon-like mode, one more time, I really wanted to talk about the NBA, but we're going to run out of time, Matt, so I hope to have you on next week to talk about the NBA, because in the last 4 minutes, I want to finish up with this. First of all, were you familiar with Davy and Goliath on Sunday mornings? Just curious if you were old enough when Davy and Goliath were on, because was Davy the favorite over Goliath? I'm just curious. I didn't know.
I never saw the cartoon, but okay. Now you got me curious. I'm gonna go find it on YouTube now. I was alive when that aired.
It was actually claymation, but, you know, close enough. So I was just curious, okay. All right, because I never know with you. I never know where we're headed, which means it's pretty dangerous because, you know, I'm never near the rudder of the ship either. So somebody's got to be, you know. I was with a buddy of mine one time. We were driving back from Los Angeles, and we should have just called in a night and found a hotel to sleep. Instead, we said, okay, we're going to get home. And it's the truth. We're outside of Bakersfield after coming off the grapevine. And thank goodness there was nobody around, because I was sleeping, leaning against in his Toyota Celica, I think we had. I was leaning against the passenger side window sleeping, and I opened the left eye, and guess what? He was leaning against the driver's side window sleeping, which meant there was nobody particularly driving the car. That's you and I on the air right now. Nobody's driving this car, all right? Okay. I want to finish on a more serious note, if that's possible in all the years we've known one another. Did we find ourselves deprived of the first team since UNLV? And I'm going to say it one more time. I hardly consider that 89-90 UNLV team Cinderella. That's preposterous, because they could have won 20 or 30 games of the NBA. But they are the last non-Power 5, as we've talked over and over again, to win the thing. You really have to go back, in my opinion, to Marquette, the Al McGuire 77 team, as a true Cinderella, the last one we've had that was a non-Power 5. But have we been deprived of it between Gonzaga, Dayton, San Diego State? Was somebody going to cut down the nets, or were the big boys going to show up? Not that Gonzaga isn't a big boy, but by designation in conference, was somebody of the major conferences going to show up to win this thing this year?
I think you can say it was a 50-50 chance it was going to happen, because if you look at the top six teams,
yes,
three of them,
sure,
from those, three of them are from those non-majors. I mean, you got Gonzaga, Dayton, and San Diego State in the top six. So there's, you know, they had just as much a chance as Kansas, Florida State, or Baylor.
That's one of the more basic stats you'll give me there on Mr. Analytics. But what? Okay, I know it could have happened, and I do understand. Even I, in a rudimentary education I might have had, understand 3 of 6 is 50%, okay? People at Fresno State, very proud of that. But in the last minute here, would it have happened? Would one of those three have won it, or would we have fallen back to the big boys ultimately?
Oh, I have no idea.
45 seconds.
This was the year that it had a bigger chance, even when Gonzaga got to the final a couple of years ago.
You don't have to hedge. It can't be proven. Just say it.
Yes.
You don't have to be hedged. Yes.
Tony.
Okay, who would it have been?
In the future, David and Goliath. Jesus has spoken to me, and yes, it will happen.
Oh, okay. You know what? On that, I'm just going to leave it, period, all right? Because there's nowhere I could go from that. You have played your trump card with that. There is no comeback to that particular statement that I could use on the air. There might be a few things I'll tell you about afterward, but not on the air, that's for sure. Okay, as usual, it has been real, my friend. Real what? I'm not sure, but it has been pretty amazing. Darryl, I hope people visit hoopmag.com, NBA.com, because there's so much going on in the league that we didn't get to. I'll talk to you next week, my friend. Take care.
God bless you, Tony. God bless us all.
Okay. You got it. Be safe, my friend. Darryl Howerton, great guy, and he puts up with me. So, you know, that'll carry him a long way in future life, I guess. We'll take a break on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.